football on off the ball.
Arteta will have his regrets, I'm sure, of course, but it nearly worked. And the strategy he chose for the season as a whole worked in both the Premier League and the Champions League. It just fell short.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Delighted to say that boxing commentator, reporter, writer, podcaster, all of the above for the 42.ie, Gavin Casey is on the line. Gav, how you doing?
Flying it, Adrian. How are you doing?
Flying it, yeah. Did this come out of the blue for you?
No, I suppose not. I've got a wedding that weekend when it's been proposed the 5th of September, and I've already had that conversation with my close friend that I wasn't going to make it to the wedding. He tells me he might not make it either now, you know, but it was probably... I felt for a fair few weeks that the talks had sounded a lot more positive than they had when these relevant parties, Matchroom and Pro Park Limited, had reached an impasse in the past. And I think the big difference this time around, Adrian, was that, like, Eddie Hearn, being inspired by, unfortunately, probably an AI image of Katie Taylor walking out of Pro Park that was sent to him by a member of Taylor's team, Moss Rowan, or be it the fact that she was quite... definite in that this was going to be her last fight no matter what, and that actually if Pro Park wasn't delivered, she probably wasn't going to fight again. It sort of inspired him to get this over the line, probably part with more money than he was willing to during previous negotiations between these parties, and the job is all but done, as will be confirmed on Friday.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to ask you. It sounds like you're saying that Eddie Hearn was the one that gave a little bit here, the one that bent a bit.
I actually don't have the exact details yet. Like, they've been very, very coy in terms of what they've given away in recent weeks. I've found in past negotiations when things would hit a kind of a fractious point, one side might give you a little bit on the other, and where things have broken down. And that's probably another reason why I was a little bit more positive about it around this time, Adrian, in the sense that nobody was giving much away, which suggested to me that things were actually going pretty well. And my suggestion that is that Hearn has ultimately cocked up more, because I think he was more adamant that it had to happen this time around, and also because they aren't necessarily for bending, at least on the bigger fees here. Like, you know, they have plenty of musical artists or music promoters, more so, who are willing to pay that to put Bon Jovi in Pro Park, to put The Weeknd in Pro Park, for example. So they don't necessarily need money. I think some of the little... and little points of negotiation that may be of interest to people would be like, okay, when do you actually stage this event? And because there are concerts there beforehand, like, I'd imagine Matchroom have worked it into their contract that they don't need to relay the pitch as a result of this fight, because, you know, chances are is it Aiken Promotions or whoever will at least, you know, join them in paying for that, or possibly will have already agreed to have footed that bill. So little things like that take a long time to iron out, particularly when you have parties in a room with significant egos such as Peter McKenna and Brian Peters and Eddie Hearn, all successful businessmen. But as we say, after 4 years, the slowest moving and possibly most boring at times.
The line to what looks like Miami, but I believe might not be quite that far flung, although it's quite beautiful in the background, potentially Barcelona just breaking up for us there a little bit. We'll try and re-establish Gav and get him back on the line. Gav, you with us? I think you're back. Gav, you with us?
I am, sorry. My mother rang me.
There's nothing more Irish than that. So listen, it does lead us nicely into the next point of topic, because, like, we were talking about myself and Arthur at the top of the show just about the capacity. So, like, you know, the big thing has always been, will it sell out 80,000? So I presume part of those negotiations over the last few months have been, it might not be 80, like, it could be 60, or what's the lower end that we can all feel comfortable at sort of getting out of town here? What's your... this is like an impossible answer to question, to answer even, but so go with it where you want. But the conversation around the 80,000, what's your expectation around that?
I think the fear for a lot of people would be that if it optically looked bad, if there were lots of empty seats, it would feel like a letdown to this sporting icon. And I understand that. I think if it got to that point, actually what would happen is Matchroom would just start handing out tickets left, right and centre, because they would care about the optics, as would DAZN, the broadcast before the fight. So I'm not really concerned about that. For example, like, just as a comparison, recently Tyson Fury fought at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and I think during the week for that fight there were only like 18,500 tickets sold. It sounded like it was going to look shocking on TV. By the time the fight came around, it was pretty packed, and like, Spurs employees were offered 8 tickets each, complimentary tickets each, in order to make it fill up. I don't think it will get to anywhere near that point here. It is impossible to gauge as to whether they get up to 80. The break-even point, from my understanding, would be around 60 to 65. And that's at a reasonable pricing model, which I would have been privy to when I, at least during the initial negotiations back around 2022, 2023, at which point, like, the starting price for tickets would have been something like 40 or 45 euro. There would have been a lot of like family-friendly tickets, family discount tickets, group tickets, etc. Obviously, they're marketing this thing more so as a celebration of Irish culture. Now, what does that mean? I'd imagine, inevitably, we're going to see Eddie Hearn try and pop a slitter over the bar at Croke Park, and that kind of thing might turn people's stomachs. But I equally think this will be an opportunity probably for a few Irish music lads to get in on the act, so to speak. I think they are going to lean heavily into this being a celebration of Irish culture. It won't just be a nighttime event. I'd imagine there'll be things running right throughout the day. And I think with that in mind, you can attract families to it. And Taylor is a family-friendly poster person for Irish sport, right? So I think packaged the right way, you could certainly get close to filling it out. I've never had a straightforward answer to the question, Adrian, in that, like, it's so unprecedented for a boxer in this country. The only parallel we can draw probably is to Muhammad Ali in 1972 in a completely different economic time. You know, it's very, very hard to gauge. I would trust that Matchroom, fueled by Brian Peters as well, who understands the Irish psyche a lot better than Eddie Hearn and understands the GAA psyche. Well, if he didn't before, he does now. I mean, he'd be friendly with Sean Boylan, among others, but he'd certainly understand it after negotiating with them for the last 4 years. I think they can get it close. I think they can get it close at the right price.
Okay. The family thing I'm intrigued by, that would, so it can't be at 9 or 10 o'clock at night then, the fight, whatever about the entertainment beforehand.
I suppose, look, family friendly, I mean, you know, 8 or 9 o'clock is conceivable, right? What I mean is I don't think the main event would run at like 11 p.m. as would typically be the case for a Matchroom show. I'm guessing at that. And again, I think a lot of that will be revealed on Friday. I haven't had any sort of inside track in that. I've heard suggestions, of course, that I could run a lot earlier during the day, that it could actually be sort of like a late evening kind of an event. There were some suggestions that Ed Sheeran would be involved playing at it as well, in which case maybe the boxing would come first and then Ed Sheeran would play a few songs. I'm sure all of that will be revealed on Friday as well, although I haven't heard much on that front in recent times. But look, I think in fairness, if you're talking about a once in a generation kind of a sporting event and you're a parent, it's like, if your kid wants to go, can they stay up until 9 o'clock on a Saturday night plus traffic home? Maybe you make the exception this time around, you know, and hopefully parents sort of meet the promoters halfway if that is the case.
That's interesting, yeah. And like, it probably does away with a notion that I was having a little bit earlier on today, that, like, you know, that she'd end up on some sort of a 3-month blitzkrieg of PR to try and shift the tickets, which wouldn't be conducive, obviously, to, listen, not conducive to her personality, you'll probably say, to begin with, and you'd be right, but not conducive as well to actually training for the final fight of her career.
Yeah, I mean, she's going to base her training predominantly, you'd imagine, over in Connecticut, where she lives now and where she's married. And she's obviously based her entire professional career there, training with Ross Enemy. She's been working away, though, as well, in recent months. Like, she's known this is coming down the tracks for quite a while. And listen, she tends to keep herself at around fighting weight anyway, even when she's not fighting. So, like, look, she's probably... I would say there's a degree to which she may try and embrace this, right? And like, we can talk about opponents in a second, but there is every chance that she will maybe lean into that more fun side of things and try to enjoy the marketing element to it, in that she knows this time around she's got to shift the tickets. By the way, this is a boxer who sells incredibly well. Like, she's twice sold out Madison Square Garden with Amanda Serrano. The first time in 2022, it was probably 70-30 in Taylor's favour. Second time around, Serrano's stock had grown, largely through fighting Taylor. It might have been 60-40 the other way, but that's no mean feat for a boxer who's from 5,000 kilometres away. You know, Serrano is a New Yorker. So I think sometimes we sort of underestimate her commercial pull or her selling power as a kind of a character whose gravitas causes people to gravitate towards them. But yeah, 82,000 tickets is a lot of tickets. So she's got to be able to do something. The degree to which she actually, it's hard to see a 3-month campaign when she's training on the other side of the world from a different time zone, for sure. So I guess she's just got to make it count when she does talk about it. And Eddie Hearn, to some extent, will have some influence on people attending. And equally, I think, again, some of those supplementary parts that we don't know quite yet what they are, I'm sure will entice people. I think above all else, it's like, even if you're not necessarily a massive boxing fan, it's somebody who's represented the country with grace and with great success for 25 years almost on the international stage. And for one night only, if you could get a ticket for 45 or 60 quid, if you have the means, of course. You know, why not? I've been to plenty of boxing events. Maybe some people have a different impression of them or whatever, but they're pretty fun. And like this one could be one that you remember or your kids remember for as long as they live. I don't think that's necessarily a bad prospect.
Yeah, she's in the conversation for the GOAT, so there's definitely that aspect to it. So who is she going to fight?
Yeah, so the opponent that makes the most sense to me is Flora Pilly. She's a French woman who is, she's only had 12 professional fights, so a lot less seasoned than Taylor. But the reason why she makes sense is that she's the number one challenger, she's the mandatory challenger to the IBF title that Taylor still holds, but she's also the number one contender for the WBC title, which is vacant. Now, here's where you typically lose people who aren't boxing fans, but I'll try and make sense of that. When Taylor took her hiatus after beating Amanda Serrano for the third time last July, the WBC asked her politely, will you relinquish the title so that two other women can fight for it? Sandy Ryan subsequently went on and acquired that title, but Sandy Ryan recently confirmed that she's pregnant. She will be taking her own hiatus, so the WBC title has been freed up again. So Taylor holds three of the four belts that make you an undisputed champion. The WBC one is the odd one out. That's being vacated. And Fury, this French woman, is the number one contender for that title. So you could put Taylor's three belts on the line, the vacant WBC belt on the line, and it's an undisputed fight against a, you know, let's be honest, a no-name opponent to most Irish fans, but it's also a way of marketing this. It's for the undisputed title. So that's the one that makes most sense. It hasn't been confirmed yet. I have a feeling it will be her, and that's not based on any word I've heard from Taylor's team or anybody else. It's just, it kind of makes logistical sense to me. It wouldn't surprise me if they don't actually announce the opponent on Friday, because what they might do is see how much the event appeals to people even without the opponent, and say if it's not tracking to meet expectations, then you maybe look at a different opponent, you look at a bigger name and draft them in and see if you can sell those additional tickets that way. But on paper, to me, Flora Pilly is the opponent that makes sense. They're kind of an eminently beatable yet worthy challenger for Taylor's crown and that vacant belt that I mentioned.
Yeah, she's 12-0. Obviously got something about her, very young in her career. Definitely a little bit underwhelming. There is no getting away from that, like you've pointed out yourself, that, you know, she's not a known name. And there's no chance that... So I saw, like, Stephanie Han, sister of Jennifer Han, who Katie's beaten before, was out at the weekend. With Holly Holm, she was fighting at the weekend and she beats her and she says, I'm coming for you, Katie, or some version of that. And I'm like, listen, everybody who's fighting or gets a microphone in front of them now is be... They won't be doing their job if they're not saying something similar. There's no chance...
Sorry, Adrian, just to mention, like, Holly Holm's defeat probably really put a kibosh on it, in the sense that, like, she would have been a named opponent. Like, she's the mixed martial artist who stopped Ronda Rousey when Rousey was invincible. But equally, she's a world champion boxer in her own right, or was during the earlier stage of her combat sports career, if you like. She then transitioned to mixed martial arts to make more money. And it's funny how things turn out. You know, the traffic flow has sort of turned the other way this time around. But I think Holm may have been a live opponent. And unfortunately, at defeat, like it's just a, you know, it's a no go now, obviously.
Yeah, like, so obviously dipping back into the career. I mean, the Serrano trilogy is probably going to go down for the annals of time. It surely doesn't become four. Obviously, there's the Cameron one loss, one defeat. Do you want to risk that again? There's the Delphine pursuit. Like, what does she dip back into any of that, or like, there's a balance clearly to be found here as well between. Listen, I don't think Katie Taylor is, I don't know, maybe she is, like, I want to go out and win here and I need to choose this opponent carefully.
I'd say she'd love another crack at Cameron, to be completely honest, but as much as that is the fight that would make the most competitive sense, in that Cameron was the only woman to beat her during her professional career, they're kind of locked at one apiece in a series, you know. And I really don't mean this to denigrate Chantel Cameron, who I actually find quite a likable character and an excellent fighter. Like, she just hasn't pulled up any trees in recent years where, like, her marketability, if you like, or her more so her exposure to the public, her kind of mainstream, that sort of transcendence as a character has actually gone markedly downhill since she fought Taylor. You know, she doesn't really bring a huge amount to the table commercially herself. You're sort of depending on Irish fans remembering those two fights. What were they now, like 3 years ago? And like, certainly some will. But I'd say for the hassle involved, the money that Cameron would demand equally in what's already a financially risky venture for her and others, it just wouldn't be worth the hassle for them. And I mean, if it was the difference between having to pay Cameron an extra, I don't know, 2.5 million quid or make do with selling 5,000 fewer tickets. And I'm pulling, you know, I'm talking those figures from thin air. They may sign up in the on the complimentaries being handed out, you know. It just may make more sense for them.
Yeah, unbelievable timing if it happens for Flora Pili from France. Unbelievable, right fighter, right time. You really land on your feet with that one. A couple of questions just to wrap on, Gav. She's obviously 10 years at it now, 26 fights in those 10 years, 25 wins, that one defeat, 6 wins by KO. Is she a different fighter now, or what type of a fighter is she now compared to where she was a decade ago, Katie?
I think it's actually a very interesting question in the sense that when she initially turned professional, she had this... She was carrying a new sport on her back, if you like. She'd obviously transcended amateur boxing. She dragged it to the Olympics. She was the supreme technician that we saw win Olympic gold. At Rio, I would have argued that she was actually starting to look over the hill athletically, and obviously not working with her father and losing some of that conditioning work with him was a key factor in her defeat to Mira Potonin at the quarterfinal stage, semi-final stage, excuse me. And then, like, going into the pros, I thought, okay, this is a boxer who's kind of slowed down, and she made a concerted effort to be an entertainer, right? She was conscious of the fact that the replies to social media posts about a Katie Taylor fight in 2016 or 2017 was, who cares about women's boxing? I think by entertaining to the extent that she did and waging war against opponents that she probably didn't actually need to, change that conversation from who cares about women's boxing to, oh, well, Katie Taylor is ducking Delphine Persoon, or Katie Taylor is ducking Amanda Serrano, you know, or vice versa, like they're ducking her. And it just changed the context in which women's boxing was viewed, because she, at times, boxed like some of our favorite male boxers in the professional ranks over the years, you know. And I think I for a long time felt as though she'd sort of slipped into that mold of maybe losing some of that skill and developing slightly lazier habits or developing slightly more dangerous habits defensively. And then you see her most recent fight against Serrano, like third time around at Madison Square Garden, and she boxed like it was 2009. So I would argue she's probably still every bit the boxer she used to be, but she only needs to unlock that when it's actually required. I mean, those two initial fights with Serrano were two of the best fights I've ever seen, female, male, or whatever. And for the third one, she decided to close out the rivalry by proving, actually, I've been superior to you all along. You know, like, if I box to my capabilities, you have nothing on me. And to do that in Serrano's hometown with a pro-Serrano crowd, given all the controversy between them, sort of rubber-stamped her status to me as the greatest female professional ever, because it kind of shows she has every tool in her arsenal. Whatever she needs, it's in her bag.
Yeah. Big 3 months ahead, Gav. Look forward to catching up on it again. Thanks a million.
Thanks a million, Adrian. I'd better call my mother back here.
Gavin Casey of the 42.ie. We're back after these.